First off, Real Music Radio in Uptown is not ready for what's about to happen tonight. We've been telling y'all for a long time this was coming, so you've had plenty of warning. Sit back, go get your drink, go get your hot Cheetos, sit down, get ready to learn something, get a pen to take some notes. Y'all gonna learn tonight. You gonna learn tonight. We got Jellybean Johnson with us this evening. He's taking over Masterclass. It's enough talking from me. Here we go. All right, everybody. That was Flight Time to set the show off tonight. I don't know how excited everybody else is, but everybody in my studio here is losing their minds. We've been waiting for this moment for quite a while. I don't know if y'all are ready or not, but man, I got Jellybean Johnson in the house. We're going to spend our whole night talking about the history and everything that Jellybean has done. We're not talking about anybody else. We're not focusing on anybody else tonight. Tonight, August 14th, is all Jellybean Johnson. So, man, just sit back and get ready, and welcome to the program, Jellybean.
How y'all doing?
We are doing. I don't know. I'm fanning out here because we wanted this for a long time. So we're so privileged and happy to have you here. Thanks for coming on with us.
Oh yeah, I'm honored to do it for you, Chris. Sure.
And so we're gonna go way back to the beginning, back in the days of Flight Time. How did you get started playing drums and guitar, and then how did that lead you to Flight Time, and then how were you chosen to be in the Time?
Before the Time, I ever thought about we were Flight Time. Before Flight Time was a big production company, it was a band, and we were all like 15 years old and stuff. And I met Terry Lewis when I was like 15, and met David Allen when I was like 14. I met Morris Day when I was 11, 12. We used to play drums in his mom's living room while she was at work, you know, drums in tandem, I guess. So we were 11, 12 years old. I met Prince. I played basketball in the driveway with Prince at 12. So, all these guys, you know, basically, we grew up, we came up as a young age. I mean, that's how, you know, this whole kind of movement got going.
Good. And I have to ask, who won in that basketball game?
Of course I did.
Of course. There you go. Maybe
he can play, though. Don't get me wrong, though. He can hoop. Even as short as he was, he can hoop.
All right. Now, working with Prince on records like 777, 9311, we know he did a lot of the drums on the Lin machine. Did he allow you then, when you came through, did he allow you to play on the Lin as well, or did he expect you to learn it and play it live?
He expected me to learn it, play it live. It was funny, it was a little story about 777. It was programmed by David Garibaldi of Tower Power. So Prince just made a song around a beat that, you know. And the ironic thing about that is me and Morris idolized David Garibaldi. You know, Morris plays the songs just like him. You know, we both got that pop from him, you know. So anyway, you know, everybody was freaking out about the drum beat and everything. So one day, the three of us, me, Prince, and Moore, sat down, and we figured out how is Jellybean going to play this in concert, because it's a very difficult beat. And, you know, you can't be messing around in concert, man. You know, you got to act like you know what you're doing, plus you got your guys dancing. So if the drums are stumbling, it's not going to work. So we figured out a way. You know, Prince did it for a minute and Morris, and then, I got my interpretation of it, and we got close enough, and it sounded pretty good. And, you know, and then you have to realize during this time, the Time was rehearsing 8 hours a day, every day. So, you know, it was easy for us to get tight, and you know, it became second nature. Now it's hard now, 61 years old, but I still can play it, you know, and get away with it in concert. So.
All right. And then when Purple Rain came out and Jam and Lewis had been fired, and at that point, was the writing on the wall that the Time was finished, or did you feel like Prince had a long-term goal for the new lineup with St. Paul and some of the other guys?
Yeah, well, it was a difficult time. Actually, you know, he fired Terry and Jimmy, and me and Monty both quit too, so it was actually four of us was gone. And I went back because, I had my first child, and let's face it, I had a house and stuff, and I needed money. So I went back, and then he started looking for replacements, because he didn't realize Purple Rain was going to get made regardless. And so we started looking for replacements, and Paul happened to be an 18-year-old kid with a lot of talent, and he was one of the choosing. you know, and so Jesse kind of, you know, tried to take over and run over him, but, you know, I wouldn't let him. So, and so that's, you know, that's how Paul ended up in the Times at 18 years old.
Okay, and then the Time officially is done. We go to the family, and we know the Time was just that cool R&B funk, that raw, just everything perfect. And then Prince pulled you in for the family, and he had a completely different sound. Like, what was your reaction to that, and how did you know that was going to be a good fit for you?
Well, you know, the thing that really, to me, that made the family different was Eric, you know, Eric Leeds. You know, Eric is a world-class sax player. So, you know, and then we had a girl, you know, the Time was all about macho, you know, stuff like that. And even we had Susanna, you know, it was a whole different spin on it. And then I remember Prince sent us to L.A. And we did Screams of Passion. We were in session. We was watching Claire Fisher put the strings on it. And it just, it almost had me in tears, man, because, I mean, you know, it was just a whole different sophisticated R&B thing with strings. And, you know, that's the first time I really experienced that, you know, so.
And it was cool because it worked. When you listen to that record, you're expecting, yeah, like, just
it ran to the top 10. It
right.
Did.
Yeah. And when you're on the outside and you're listening to it, you're like, okay, at first, when you start hearing the strings, you're like, okay, what is this? But by the time the songs pick up, you're like, oh my God, it's like, it's revolutionary. Pardon the pun.
Absolutely. And you know, it was the same thing for Nothing Compares. It's the same thing. You know, it was just a beautiful song, man, you know. And I remember when we first got it, you know, Prince had kind of a rock edge on his stuff. And he sent Paul that, you know, and then, you know, to his house and told him, you need to learn this. And Paul learned it. He did a great job on it, you know. And I was like, wow, you know.
And then the family is broken up for various reasons. And you kind of went about your way to do some stuff with some other artists, notably Alexander O'Neill. Tell us about how that came about and what kind of work you did with him.
Well, okay. When the family broke up, first I'll tell you a little side story about that. Prince is a niece, and he calls me. And he says, you know, Jelly Bean, I want you to join the Revolution. I said, yeah. I said, that's cool. I said, but what are we going to do about the family? And he hung up.
Wow.
So then I kind of knew, you know, I'm about to do something. So anyway, you know, I was tight with Terry and Jimmy, and they were just starting their production company. And so I started hanging out with them and, you know, learning the producer side. So I watched them intently and seeing how they did it and stuff. And Alex was one of the first, you know, people that did it, you know, besides Climax was actually the first, but Alex was after that and Sherelle. And I just kind of watched, you know, the process. And the first thing I did, in the process of learning, I played a guitar solo on Innocent. You know, that kind of broke the ice for me is when I did that. So then, after that, then they asked me to do a song on the next record, on Hearsay record. And they liked the rock guitar stuff, so I did Criticize. Now, there are rock guitars in Criticize, but they're buried, but they're there. So, but it turned out pretty cool.
Yeah, I think some people, when they hear of the Minneapolis sound outside of Prince, they immediately go to Jimmy and Terry, which is another reason why we're doing this tonight, because I want everybody to know they did a lot and we're not going to discount their contributions, but oh my gosh, like the stuff that you've done, people before tonight aren't going to know. And it's just amazing everything that you've contributed.
Yeah. See, that's the thing, Chris. I tried to, you know, even though I was in their company, I tried to make myself different. And I think the guitar is what made my stuff be different, you know, because I made it, you know. And some of it, they buried some of it, but a lot of it got out there and stuff. And so you always knew the difference between my productions and them. I mean, even though I was used them sometimes as musicians, it still would be different because of, you know, the rock spin or the guitar spin I would put on the songs that I would do. So
now the family is done, and the work with Alexander O'Neill is kind of finished for a second. Morris Day's working on his second record, Daydreaming. And I know that Jimmy and Terry worked with him on Fishnet. What was your involvement? Mm-hmm. What was your involvement in that as well?
Well, I got another side story about that. You know, when we finished, it's funny about that. When we finished the shooting, we played First Avenue. You know, the recordings from The Bird and from Jungle Law are from. We did the Time did one show at First Avenue, and they took the recordings from that and put them in Purple Rain. okay, so we got through with that particular concert. Morris went out the back door, and I didn't see him for 2 years. You know, about 2-3 years, I didn't see him. So the next time I saw him, he showed up at Flighttime Studios. You know, we were rolling by then. And Terry and Jimmy created Fishnet. And Jimmy wanted me to do a guitar solo on it. So, of course, you know, I did it. I put some guitar harmonies in there, but of course, the guitar, who think they knew what the hell, whatever. So anyway, they didn't like the guitar harmonies in there, so we just did it. Ended up as I did the guitar solo and then did a jam with behind it with a synthesizer. And that's how the solo on Fishnet.
Okay, and then In the middle of doing all that, you're still writing and producing for other artists.
Yeah.
And we can't talk about the Minneapolis music without talking about Janet. And my favorite story that I want you to tell everybody that you guys told me and blew my mind with, Black Cat is definitely my favorite Janet song. And I know that you had a lot to do with that. So tell us the story about Black Cat and all of your involvement with that particular song.
Okay. And my whole environment with Janice first started on Control when I did guitar solos on that album too. But when we did Black Cat, you know, Janet came to me, she had a little recording of a riff on a piano. And so if you know me, Chris, you know, I love heavy guitar and metal. And during that time in the late 80s, the metal scene was vibrant. And I was into it. Even though I was doing a lot of R&B and stuff, I was into a lot of heavy rock and stuff. So when I heard this riff, you know, I said, damn, you know, I wonder what that would sound like with a heavy guitar doing it. So I had a friend, his name was David Berry. He was playing a band, actually, ironically, right down the road from Lifetime at Eddie Webster's, whatever. And he was in the band and stuff. And I said, you know what, I'm going to ask David, you know, I'm going to bring him by the studio. And so we did. We brought him by, and we got a Marshall amp. And back then, I used to cut my solos with a Walkman through the board. So I made David do two passes, one with Marshall, and then one with the Walkman, you know, through the board and a heavy metal pedal or whatever stuff. And then after that, it was real heavy, and I was liking what I was hearing and stuff. And so, I let him do the solo. Now, you know, ironically, Jesse Johnson cussed me out about not doing the solo on Black Cat, but I wanted it to be as you know, as metal as I could. I wanted to be as black rock and heavy metal as it could be, especially in light of her brother, you know, Michael being, you know, with Pretty Diana and Beat It and all that stuff.
Right.
I wanted her to have something heavy like that. So, and it turned out great, man. It really did. So,
yeah,
I was shocked.
I love that song. I would say that's probably the one in my phone and in my car that gets the most spins because it's an amazing track. And after hearing the story that you guys had told me, I definitely play it more, and I proudly tell everybody, I know Jelly Bean firsthand wrote that song. He had a lot to do with it. Y'all don't know. You probably thought that was Jesse Johnson on the guitar, but nah, that's Jelly Bean.
Yeah,
and I love schooling folks.
I got accused of being Jesse Johnson a bunch of times, Chris. Don't trust me.
Right. If there was a guitar being played in the Minneapolis sound in the 80s and 90s, it got attributed to the wrong guy when it was probably you.
Yeah. And it's funny, too, because, you know, when that song got big, like, a lot of superstar guitar players, you know, played solos and then remixes and stuff. There's a pass with Vernon Reed. There's a pass with Jesse Johnson. Nuno Bonacart, you know, from Extreme, you know, he's with Rihanna now and all that. Some badass guitar players, you know, took turns of that, you know. So I was honored, man. And I also know for a fact a lot of heavy metal bands loved that song back in the day. You know, I know Motley Crue and all them guys were like tripping on Janet about that song. So.
Now, Mint Condition. I know there's a big story there. I know you had a lot more involvement than you were credited for. So, man,
yeah.
let us in on the history and the story of Mint Condition.
Well, they're my musical sons. And, you know, my big brother and one of my best friends in the world, James Popeye Greer, was their manager back then. And we used to go see them at the various clubs, and they would be playing Pretty Brown Eyes, and I'd be like, damn, you know. And so Terry and Jimmy had kind of approached me about, you know, doing a band and stuff, and, you know, I wasn't sure, you know, because when you're in the time and stuff, you know it's automatically they were going to get compared to us, whatever. So anyway, we brought them in, and we did Pretty Brown Eyes, and, it's went from there. And it, the thing about Mint is, like, they're so musical, man. They're a joy to work with, because, especially Stokely, because, you know, you only got to tell him once what to do. You know, you only got to tell him once what to sing or what to play, you know. And you just sit there. He's going to give you, if you sit there and be patient, he's going to give you what you need and what's best for a song. And that's how their first album evolved. My other favorite on there, which I think the rock girl kind of slept on, was "I Wonder If She Likes Me." And I remember I sat there for a few hours with Pop tracking, you know, those harmony leads and stuff in that, man. And then Rick, their bass player, played a lot of guitar on there too. So that's a heavy song, man, and they kind of got overlooked, but it's a badass song on their first record.
Side story on that, you did a Twitter chat last week, and you told a really cool story about "I Wonder If She Likes Me." Can you share that story with us tonight?
I think it's a great rock song, man. And, you know, and like I said, I put a lot of time into the guitars. I mean, they're meticulous on there, man. Even when I was listening the other day, and I was kind of amazed at how good, you know, I did the solos through a Marshall. And I was just trying to get around, you know, Stokely's vocals and stuff. It's real drums on there, which, you know, I love. It's, you know, that's the reason my singing today, "Put Some Jelly On It," has real drums. But, you know, the time, the original seven, the time, they had a lot of drum machine stuff, man. And, you know, and then I recreate that stuff live, but, you know, I like real drums on the record. I like it, you know, because even though I've been my own drum clique for 30 years, I still, you know, I got a lot of badass drummer friends that, you know, I think, you know, with my record, it's going to be mostly live drums.
So. Absolutely.
But yeah, that's the thing with "I Wonder If She Likes Me." It's just, it's a serious rock song, a black rock song. And, I got lucky in here.
and I know one regret that you have with that is you were rolling around with somebody and they played you a song and then you wanted to play them this song, but you were like, you didn't, and maybe you kind of regret that.
I was sitting, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I was sitting in Prince's yellow BMW this years ago, and he played me "Cream," you know, and I said, you know, he said, "Look, this is my new single, it's "Cream." Okay. Now I'm sitting there, Chris, with a cassette of Mint Condition in my pocket. And, you know, and I'm just thinking, I really want to play, but, you know, I just got gunshot in my head, didn't play for him. And I really wonder, you know, I know he would have liked "I Wonder If She Likes Me." I know he would have. You know, but I didn't play it for him.
Yeah.
He went on to use them a lot, you know, a lot of the shows at Paisley. He played with them. He took them to Europe and stuff. So he established a relationship. He knew they were great musicians.
Right. And I feel like, even though maybe he didn't verbally express it from the sidelines, you gotta feel like he was cheering you guys on from the sidelines with the things that you were doing, especially you being not really the underdog's not the right word, but because of what Jimmy and Terry were doing, it kind of seems like you were almost the underdog. And I kind of feel like, okay, he sees these guys doing their thing, but he really sees you, maybe really sees you doing your thing. And I feel like with the quality of stuff that you were on, I would hope that he would be on the sidelines being like, yeah, that's Jelly Bean.
He was a big fan, bro. He causes a lot of difficulties and stuff, but he was a big fan. And he knew that, you know, every guy and everybody in the time has been to the top 10 by themselves, you know, and Jerome had his own record deal that nobody knows. So that's the thing. You don't find too many black R&B bands that, you know, have that everybody in there in the band has produced a top 10 hit. You know, that's the time. That's the original time. Yeah.
So we get to 1989, 1990. Prince wants to put the band back together for the Graffiti Bridge and Pandemonium project. I know there was a Corporate World project before those that kind of morphed into Pandemonium. What were your initial thoughts when you got the word, like, hey, he wants to bring you guys back in?
When he pulled the corporate thing, he was trying to do a time record with just Jerome and Morris. And, you know, one of us was like, we're not having that, you know?
Right.
We want all the Bristol guys. And so, you know, he went back and he did a few songs, you know, and a few songs on Pandemonium is from that Corporate World thing, you know, that made the record. But anyway, one of us wanted all of us. So that's what, you know, that's what morphed into Pandemonium and stuff. And that's the thing, you know, it was great out and everything, but we did not tour because every time we did the, you know, did a few initial TV appearances or whatever, Terry and Jimmy would get busy or not want to tour or whatever and shit, you know, and that you gotta realize that during this time they would make $1 million a project. Well, you know, it wasn't enough love there for, I mean, if we hadn't went out and toured for a year or two, that album would have been triple platinum.
Right.
You know, all our projects, if we had, you know, got out there and played, because that's what you really have to do now. But that never came to fruition. So.
And then you chose Release It from Graffiti Bridge and Jerk Out for us to play tonight. What is it about those two songs that really stand out for you?
Well, you know, by this time I had a decent relationship with Prince, and I remember going up to Paisley up in his quarters. And, you know, that's when it was decided that the rest of us was going to be in it. So he said, Bean, what songs do you want? And I said, I want Chocolate and I want Jerk Out. And that's what he brought over to Flight Time. And that's what we started putting our spin on it, you know. But those two, I had heard them with him singing them. So I knew they were bangers, you know.
Right.
And those are two songs I wanted, you know. And so those are two we got from him.
So now we're back to the Time's disbanded again. And everybody's kind of doing their thing. Jimmy and Terry have Perspective Records, and they're making their moves. And where did you go after that? And then who did you work with before the original seven came back together?
Well, I started touring extensively with the Morris Day and the Time version. That's what was paying the bills during that time. And my production mainly was with, I have another big brother of mine, a friend of mine. His name is Ronnie Baker Brooks. And so from that time period all the way up to, like, the list of seven, you know, I'm doing his records. See, I did his first three records. So that was the bulk of my production stuff during that time, you know.
And then you also worked with New Edition. I know you did a song, Crucial, with them.
I did New Edition. I did Nona Hendrix. I did Rhonda Clark. Michael Jeffries. I did him, yeah.
And,
you know, Michael was interesting because he was, you know, we, like I said, we grew up idolizing Tower Power, and he was one of the singers from Tower Power. So it was cool doing him, too, even though Warner Brothers dropped the ball on it, you know. And Terry and Jimmy, I give them credit, they did try to push that because they did the first single with me, I'm Not Through Being With You, or something like that, or whatever. And it was a great song, but Warner didn't push it.
Right. And then... Yeah. The big question that I have for you from that time period, too, is the Mo Money soundtrack came out, and there's this amazing rock group called the Harlem Yacht Club, and they have a song called Brother Will. I need to know the story about the Harlem Yacht Club.
Okay, that was for the Mo Money soundtrack, and Jimmy Jam, he saw with the success I had from Black Cat, whatever, he said, Bean, we need a rock song for this Mo Money. It needs to sound like Guns N' Roses. So I got together. I had put together the Harlem Yacht Club with just three of us, and you know, and we actually had a girl too. Her name is she's Ann Leslie's daughter. I don't know if you know Ann Leslie's the sound of Black. Her name is Jamisha Bennett. So anyway, we did a whole we recorded a whole bunch of rock songs and stuff. But anyway, we got Brother Will. We got a real for and stuff, and we used the singer's name is John Richardson. He happened to be in a band with the bass player, and. We cut it, you know, we cut it at Flight Time. It was live drums again. I had Stokely play the drums. And Frank Striblin from, you know, he was with the singer that just died, Sharon, what's her name? Sharon, wow, I cannot remember her name. But anyway, he was in Flight Time. He was the guitar player at Flight Time and stuff. And we did it, and at first, you know, I got a little drawback from Jimmy Jam. You know, he was like, you know, he liked it. So, you know, they ended up putting it on there.
Okay. And
it was funny, too, when I saw it, they put it with the music. It went perfectly with the scenes in the movie and stuff. You know, they're fighting and shooting each other. That song was perfect.
And then were there plans for a record and a full-length album release?
Say that again, Chris.
Was there plans for a full-length album release with the Harlem Yacht Club?
Yeah, I wanted to, but Terry and Jimmy canned it. You know, I just sat there and involved and stuff. I would love to know what happened to them songs. They're probably gone, whatever. But yeah, I did a whole record of them. And they were great. They were songs like Brother Will. But great.
Okay, and when the idea came back up for the original seven to get back in the studio, whose idea was that? And how did it fall apart almost as quickly as it got started?
Yeah, it's so frustrating. I mean, it's kind of frustrating to talk about it, but Gary pushed the issue about getting us back together. So, you know, and so he approached Jesse Johnson. You always got to get Jesse first, because he's the most difficult. So we started, you know, he started cutting songs and stuff. And it was cool for a minute, you know. Now, the only problem, a lot of people don't know, most a lot of people, Flight Time was having problems. We didn't, you know, it wasn't well documented, but they were. And so anyway, you know, we were cutting stuff. Most of that stuff was cut out there in L.A. And Gary got us a deal, you know, even though I never saw a dime from him. He got us a deal, and they put it out. Now, the only problem with Chris with a major release like that is, you know, sure, you can do all the TV and all that stuff, but you have to get out to play. Now, right. The Morse Date and Time version, already, we were already out playing. We gave up gigs to go do a few appearances with the original band. But the original band never sustained, you know, being out there on the road and doing what you're supposed to do. I mean, look at Journey right now. Journey's on tour, you know. Def Leppard. So right. That's what you have to do. You know, you have to get out off your butt and work, period.
Right.
You know, otherwise, you're wasting your time. You're spinning your wheels. And that has happened every single time we've had a major release. That's what happened. Now, them guys will get mad at me about it. I don't care, you know. But this is what it is. And people, you know, the press people will say I'm bitter and all that. Yes, I am. They can say that. I don't care. You know, I was here. I saw what happened. That's what happened.
Right. And so we're going to play the track, Oh, You Don't Know Me Now. I'm glad you picked that one, because that's the one, if I'm playing a song off of that record, that is the one that I go to.
That's classic Jesse Johnson. That's sinister, funkadelic. Jesse Johnson got some hit. That's great. Another good one on there is called Role Playing, too. Role Playing is good. Role Playing.
I'm going to go back and check that one out as soon as we're done tonight, then.
Yeah.
And so now the original seven is done again, and then everybody's like, what are we doing? When are we going to hear some good music? And then out of nowhere comes F Deluxe. How did that get started? And tell us about your journey with Paul and Susanna again, because, man, you guys did some amazing records, and I can't wait to hear about this.
Paul reached out to me. You know, he thought, you know, he knew I was in the time and stuff, but, you know, him and Eric and Susanna decided after 30 years, and we wanted to do something. So we got together and had a little powwow and stuff, and they asked Prince, you know, because we wanted to be the family. You know, After Love is the family.
Right.
But we're sitting at dinner. We get a call from his people saying, no, you can't use the family. And we was like, why? You know, he didn't give us a reason why. He didn't want to, like, once again, he didn't want to contribute to the record. I mean, Paul said, what do you want? You know, what money you want? You know, what songs? You know, whatever. We just, 30 years has passed. We want to record. We love each other. We want to record. And he wasn't having it. He wasn't hearing it. So we decided, and Paul told him, said, well, you know what? We're going to put this out regardless. We'll change the name. But this record's going to come out regardless. And so he was salty about it, but, you know, he didn't stop us. So we started doing some shows. We did a show in the theater here and stuff. We did some in Chicago and, you know, just started kind of got our feedback wet and cut the record, you know. Some of us cutting Ollie, you know, our other guitar player is Ollie Oliver Lever, you know, the famous Jerry Lever's son. And a lot of us got a history on and stuff here in Paul's house. And we put out the first record, man, the first deluxe record. And Lover, the first song off of it, the first song that convinced me was Lover off of that record. That is, because it sounded, because classic sounds like the family. It does.
Yeah, and then.
So this one we've had, you know, our covers record, and we had, you know, a few other things. We had what's the last thing that I can't remember? Anyway, that's the one. We have like four records. We have a live and tight where we play all the old family stuff, which is really cool.
Yeah, the records are amazing, and if you guys don't have them, get out and get the records. They're on iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify. You can find them anywhere. You can go in Minneapolis anywhere and buy the actual physical CDs. AM Lover is the cover CD he's talking about. You guys do a lot of 70s covers, and they're as good, if not better, than the originals. So you've been touring with Morris Day and the Time for probably longer than, obviously longer than you toured with the Time.
Over 30 years, yeah.
And what is it about the longevity? Like, what do you think it is, the reason for the longevity and the appeal to the fans?
Wow. It amazes me every night, you know, because we have decent crowds every night, man. And, you know, we're some 60-year-old men, so, you know. But I think it's the love of musicianship, and we pick the right guys, you know. And I think sometimes Morris forgets, you know, just how blessed he is to have the guys he's got, you know. And some of these guys that are not original, me and Monty and all the other originals there, but some of these guys have been with us 25 years now. So, you know, it makes it a lot simpler, you know, to do things, and we know what we can feel each other. You know, Morris, he has a comfortable thing there because, you know, he knows we got his back.
Right.
And so that's why it has lasted this long, you know. And then every once in a while we get called on TV or something. That always helps, you know, so.
Right, and I got to give you a huge congratulations because I heard the other night y'all played to a sellout crowd of 15,000.
Yeah, it was us with a bunch of bands. It was a Daz band and Barcades and the girl from Entombe, Tawata AG. We headlined. Yeah, we did headline, but it's just cool, man. It shows a lot of love out here. So I don't know how much longer it's going to be. You know, like Jerome said, the time has an expiration date on it. Right, but, you know, we'll see.
Right, and so this brings us to where we're at now. I mean, you've spent years and years, obviously, molding other artists and helping other artists get their piece in, and then it's finally time to get Jelly Bean's piece in, do something for Jelly Bean. You're one of the most generous guys out there that every musician that I've talked to, when I talk about you, they're like, yep, the guy would give you a shirt off his back, and clearly, all these years coming up to now, you've done that for everybody else, so what was the final straw where you're like, okay, it's time to do something for myself. I'm gonna put this project out. And what was the genesis really in getting that together?
Well, my inner circle, you know, like I said, James Popeye Greer and Marty Bragg, my manager, stuff. And you know, over the years, various guys that, you know, Terry Lewis has said, mentioned it, doing it. Paul had always said, you know, you play the blues like that, you know, you should really think about putting a new record out. I'm doing something on yourself. Just this solo stuff is new to me. I'm just getting into it. You know, I've always been a team player. So it's a little bit different when you're on the spotlight stuff. And, you know, Ronnie Baker Brooks wrote me a great song. It's Minneapolis funk, it's Chicago horns, music from the streets. It's got the right kind of spin on it. And then it's got the musicianship and, you know, doing my solo. It's a lot of stuff are going on in there, and that really helps too.
Yeah, the song is definitely getting a lot of positive feedback. Everybody seems to love it. I know here, everybody that I play it for, and I play it every week on my radio show, everybody loves the song. And we're anxious to hear the next thing because, you know, we can't be patient with the first one we got. We're always waiting for that new one. But this song is amazing. It's different. It's not the same thing that, you know, we're inundated with all week on the radio. So what's next for you after Put Some Jelly on It?
You can get it on CD Baby and Spotify and various other things, iTunes, stuff like that. I also have a GoFundMe page for the Jelly Bean Johnson Experience. So I've been trying to get that because, you know, we got to get some more Put Some Jellies on it around here. So we got to get some more jelly to go with it. So.
All right, and we're going to play that single right now for anybody who hasn't heard it. If you're that one person in the world who hasn't heard the song yet, we're playing for you right now. Put Some Jelly on It. The single's out, and you're doing some more shows with the Time. Are you in between the shows with the Time? Are you working on the next single for your record? Are you planning to do any shows with that band?
It's a little bit of everything. I'm trying to, you know, we're trying to, you know, do stuff with the JJ Experience and stuff, but, you know, it's kind of hard. The Time, most of the Time, keeps the light on. So, you know, I definitely doing a lot of shows with them. I'm doing some with Up to Lux, but you know, the bulk of the shows are with more standard time, and in less spare time, you know, I'm going to try to get some more songs together here. You know, that's the whole thing.
Okay, and I happen to know everybody that's playing on your song. Why don't you tell everybody who's playing on the record itself?
Okay. And the drums, Michael Bland. Bass is Tracy Blake, an amazing musician here. Ronnie Baker Brooks is the lead vocalist and rhythm guitarist. Chance Hart, a big bruh, is on synths and keyboards. We got the horns arrangements on there. It's by Tom Washington. You know, Tom Washington is famous for Earth, Wind, and Fire and a lot of horn bands from the 70s. And he's in Chicago. So he cut the horns in Chicago. And that's pretty much, I think that's everybody.
Okay, and one guy that I got the pleasure of interviewing not so long ago was Danny Cuse, and I know you guessed on his album Pink on a song called Glitter, and that guitar on that song is ridiculous. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, he called Danny. He's a funky white boy, man. He's a funky sax player, and so he called me out to his house, and he said, "Bean, I really, you know, I'd really be honored for you to play on my single." So I went up there, and one of his best friends is Dave Bailey, who was this amazing Asian guitar player. And they, you know, they turned the gas up right, and the track is amazing. So it was easy for me to throw, you know, throw some stuff on there, you know. And I felt, you know, cool. So I still haven't heard it yet. You know, man, I just forgot to send me my copy, but I'm getting ready to do a show with him. He's opening for The Time, ironically. He's opening for The Time and Sheila, I think, in October somewhere, and he wants me to come and play it. So I'm gonna go early and play that song with him.
That's going to be amazing to hear live, because I hear it on the, I got the album, I got it in the car, and every time that song comes on, I got to crank it, because, man, you do something with that guitar that people have played guitar before, and other people are really good, but, man, I mean, you definitely were blessed with the gift to be able to make that guitar sing like nobody's business.
I just work at it, bro. That's all I can do. You know, it's like, you know, to put some Jelly solo on it, you know. All my influences came out in that, and you know, it's Frank Zappa, it's Hendrix, and Prince. All that is in that solo. If you listen to it, you know, at one time or other, you heard them guys do stuff like that. So,
and then I heard it as soon as I heard the song, and you may not want to speak on it, and it's fine if you don't. But the minute I heard "It's Got to Be Jelly" because Jam Don't Shake Like That, I caught it as soon as I heard it because of what we've talked about before. So. Are you comfortable talking about if that's like a little elbow towards your boy, or if that's just a line in the song?
Well, the end of that solo is definitely not to Prince. I watched Prince play some of the most. He comes up with some of the most crazy sounds out of pedals. So I've always taught myself to do that. Just, you know, from being around him, from watching him, and watch how he would program, because he was a pedal guy like me. So he would always get these crazy sounds, and he would record them, and you'd hear them on the records. You'd be like, "What the hell is that? It's not a guitar." Yes, it is.
Right.
Yeah. But so, that was just one of the things he had, you know.
Right, and so. Everybody knows where to get the record. I want to just say it again. You can get it on Spotify. You can get it on CD Baby. You can hear it on Apple. You can get in touch with the people at Real Music Radio who are doing the GoFundMe page. Definitely help get this record made, because I've told everybody 1,000 times that these records don't get made for free, and nobody's expecting to be millionaires off of it, although everybody would like to go platinum. And you guys are making these records for us, so we need to get back in return. So if you can, you know, $10, $20, $5, whatever, put some jelly on the project, because when it comes out, it's going to be a problem if you just listen to Put Some Jelly on It and you go back and you listen to all these songs on the show and you're like, man, you hear all the talent that Jelly Bean has. Now he's done it for everybody else. It's time for us to do for him, because he's given us everything. So giving back shouldn't be much of an issue. So check out the Real Music Radio page. They have a link to that GoFundMe, and do what you can to help out the project, because when you get the album, you're going to lose your mind just off hearing Put Some Jelly on It. You know, it's going to be sick. So let's help them out. Let's get that done.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Chris. I've been throwing shows on my own around here. It's been, you know, kind of hard and stuff, but I'm going to continue to do that too, you know? So, you know, when you put out something like this, you have to stay in the people's consciousness, you know? Closed mouth don't get fed. So you know, you have if you're asking for something, you got to be able to give up some and give a quality product, you know.
Right. And
that's what I'm trying to do.
Anybody in Minneapolis, if y'all don't know when you're listening to me right now, you can go to Bunkers on Sunday night, and I guarantee you, if you pan the crowd, you're going to see Jelly Bean there, and he's going to have people around him talking to him. If you walk up to him and you greet him with a little bit of respect and some dignity, he'll talk to you. He'll take a picture with you. He'll shake your hand. He'll be happy to do it because this guy, again, is the most generous musician that you're going to come in contact with. He's given his life to this business, and he'll give you 5 or 10 minutes to talk to you, and he'll appreciate you coming up to him and giving him that respect. I have to say personally, thank you for that as well, because that's where I got to meet you in person for the first time. And it was cool that you already heard of me and you already kind of knew who I was before I knew that you knew who I was. And so it was so cool getting to meet you up there. And it was cool that you came back to Bunkers the night before we left out to come back home and got to spend that couple minutes with you. And then coming on my program, man, to talk about your career. I just, again, can't tell you how blessed and privileged I am for all of that. And when you get the next single ready, the album's ready, a tour's ready, you just want to come on the show and just say what's up. It doesn't matter to me. I will have you on the show one time. I'll have you on the show 1,000 times. This show is officially your show anytime you want to come through the door.
I'm honored, Chris. You are the truth, bro. You are the truth. And thank you. Thank you for the love, you know. We need more love today, y'all. We need it.
We definitely do. And one thing... I grew up as a fan, and I love the music, and I love the time before I knew that Jamie Starr was actually Prince. I loved the time when they were no longer with Prince. I loved all the stuff that you did, even though I didn't know what I was listening to at the time was stuff that you were working on. I love the music, and I love having met some of you guys and just seeing your personalities and that you guys are as giving as you end up being, but you, I mean, I got to have dinner with you and break bread with you. And then I got to see you those couple of times at Bunkers, and it puts it more of like, all right, this guy's a great musician, but this guy also, I feel like is a friend of mine because we got to break bread together. We got to chat and have fellowship. And so, if we're cool on a musician fan interview level, that's great for me. But when I can say, all right, I feel like Jelly Bean is a friend of mine. I can chat with him. He sends me stuff online to post, and he keeps me up to date with what he's doing, and I keep the internet up to date with what he's doing. And I'm the show that he chose to come on to talk about his career when there's other people that I know want to talk to him. I mean, that's just something for me, just from my heart, man. I can't say thank you enough.
Thank you so much.
And everybody, Real Music Radio, Uptown, Night Shift Radio Show, this right here, this is what I've waited 2 years to do. This is what I built my entire foundation on, getting to have this interview right here in this retrospective going back through the career of Jelly Bean Johnson. We started from the beginning. We've come all the way up here to what we're doing now. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. He's forgotten more about music than most of us are ever going to know. And this week we could have a 6-7-8 hour show just playing the music that Jelly Bean's worked on. Y'all listen to the show. We're going to put it on Mixcloud after you hear it tonight. Listen to it, share it, post it with your friends. Make sure everybody hears it. Send a shout out to Jelly Bean on Facebook. Let him know you heard it. We're going to have it a replay on Real Music Radio here in the future. It's also going to replay on the Night Shift Radio Network, this coming weekend. So, we're going to make sure that it gets maximum exposure. And again, Jelly Bean, thank you so much, man. And anytime you want to come on the show to announce anything, even if it's just what you had for dinner, bruh, get a hold of me, and I got you.
Thank you, Chris. You're too kind. Thank you, bro. I love you.
Love you too, brother. And you have a good rest of your evening. Give Marty my respect and my regards, and we'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Much love. See you soon.